Welcome to season 4 of Conscious Conversations. This season is titled The Educational Experience as Self-Knowledge. We explore learning not merely as instruction, but as a sacred embodied practice, a way of becoming, transforming, and returning to ourselves. I am your host, Mabato Monze, a spiritual practitioner, independent transdisciplinary researcher, and spherical guide. My work is rooted in Africana womanist ecometaphysics and grounded in indigenous knowledge systems. This podcast is an offering, a living archive of memory and possibility. Together with teachers, artists, visionaries, and cultural workers, we enter conversation as ritual, as recovery, and as reimagining. Welcome, Chad Zibelman, to Conscious Conversations. I was so intrigued by your work and our interactions, you know, after reading about the Sonda Project and reaching out and meeting you online. It was actually a referral, or somebody I know who's also based in the US introduced me to your work because she is one of your Sonda Project supporters, and she thought it would be great for us to meet Professor Monica Moody. So that's how I got to know about your work, and we've been engaging ever since, and I invited you to be a part of our Conscious Conversations community because I really like the work you do at the Sonda Project. Your work in Burkina Faso and Malawi seems very expansive. And so as part of this season, titled The Educational Experience as Self-Knowledge, exploring how education can be not merely institutional training, but how can education be a deeply relational and ethical practice that invites us to examine how we live, how we serve, and how we show up in community. And so in my invitation to you, you know, I said I'd love for our conversation to be titled Community Empowerment, a Tool for Social Education. And hoping that we will really get an opportunity to explore how communal ethical relationality as education can help shift from, you know, shift how we think about NGOs from charity to reciprocation, and how that might allow us to reimagine global partnerships as spaces of shared learning and mutual dignity and collective transformation. As someone who had founded an NGO in my early 20s, I soon recognized just how many NGOs there were in South Africa at the time. And this is like in 2011, 2012, and just how many of them really began to struggle, especially when South Africa, you know, introduced the BEE policy and things like corporate social responsibility became priorities for private companies who would get their Black empowerment ratings, by demonstrating that they were good corporate citizens. And so many of the projects that would ordinarily be outsourced to NGOs became in-house projects. And, just my observation, I recognized how much NGOs struggled, and yet how much many of them were not working together, although they had common objectives, you know. And so the issue of community engagement and how do organized communities come together to achieve common purposes. It might be difficult, challenging, but I really would like you to take us through who you are. That's just my observations around NGOs, charity, and how you got to do what you do. And that means introducing the Sonder Project to our Conscious Conversations community.
Cool. I'm just honored for the opportunity, and thank you for inviting me to speak with you. And it has been a pleasure kind of getting to know you in the last few months. And I just love kind of your approach, your perspective, which is really, from my view, just so built upon the individual and just kind of respecting your own ancestry and culture and allowing that to drive. My work, how I got to where I am, I guess, where how far back you want to go. But, you know, my story in terms of how I work in Africa began with the Peace Corps. And I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Namibia. Peace Corps, if people don't know, is a U.S. government organization that sends volunteers, U.S. citizens, to all parts of the world to do a variety of service projects. And it's changed over the years, but at the time, I was a teacher. I worked in a rural primary school in the northwest corner of Namibia, and actually really just culturally rich community. Majority of the residents were Himba, which is a unique tribe in that part of the world that still, the culture just lives and breathes so openly and so authentically in so many ways. It was an incredible place to be. And I learned so much about myself through that experience. I grew up Jewish American outside of Philadelphia and had a real problem with my own identity of, like, you know, as a Jewish American, there's like a lot of shame. There's a lot of trying to hide, to be honest, like who I was. And there were reasons for that because of, oh, just kind of prejudices that existed and kids being kids in some circumstances. But as a result, you know, I grew up with this really just separate, I created an identity separate from my identity. And I was really inspired though at the time finishing high school to travel and to experience other cultures. And so I traveled a lot after high school and during my college years, like traveling around the United States and just kind of learning to live independently. And I was always just curious about other parts of the world. I never really had traveled outside the United States, you know, growing up. But my aunt was a Peace Corps volunteer in Chad, Africa, prior to, you know, me being born. And my mother would tell you that that's not where I got my name from. But for me, it was destiny that I would join the Peace Corps. And after college, I studied education to be a high school English teacher, but I wanted to join the Peace Corps, and so I did. And through that experience working in Namibia, I learned so much about myself because, as I was already stating, like the culture in the area I was in, maybe it was so rich. Like the students that I taught would come up to me, would ask me, sir, what is your culture? What is your culture? You know, because they had such this like very clear identity of what their culture was. And to be honest, I had no idea how to answer that question. I don't know what my culture is. Like, what am I? Am I, you know, the culture that I feel like is my own, I'm not really like that even comfortable with. And so it really like got me trying to understand, well, what is my culture? And sometimes I would identify that as an American, which is like very mixed and is made up of so many things. And so, you know, I'm a melting pot of things. But as I would think more and more actually of like, well, okay, who am I? What is my identity? It actually did go back to my Jewish roots, not from a religious perspective, but from an ethnic like perspective of like this is the culture that I can't get rid of, that is like innately me. And that was a powerful just feeling, and it gave me pride in a way that I had never experienced before. It gave me a lot of appreciation for the culture that I was witnessing. And I was just touched by my entire experience living in Africa. I had the opportunity to travel to a number of countries in Southern and Eastern Africa. And I was just totally inspired, and I felt like I got so much from that work. I came back to the United States, and I wanted to share everything that I had learned and experienced, and how I felt like a more whole person as a result of this experience. So I started working. I ended up in the nonprofit world in the United States, and specifically because I had this teacher background, this education background. You know, how could I utilize education to connect people and travel? So I ended up finding another organization called Build On that built schools in developing countries and also ran community service programs in urban areas in the United States. So I was working in Philadelphia, organizing students in North Philadelphia primarily, some Center City, West Philadelphia. And we would do service projects, and students who had never left their neighborhood, students from poor socioeconomic backgrounds in the United States, in Philadelphia, we were dealing with primarily Black and Hispanic students. But students who would just be coming out and serving their community, and then I would get to lead them on trips to places where Build On worked to build schools. So I took students to Malawi and Burkina Faso and Senegal and Nicaragua and Haiti and Nepal, and got to experience kind of the experience I had over years, to see it in a kind of microcosms of all these other individuals who are experiencing like being immersed in a new culture and coming to appreciate kind of their own selves, or even just at least starting, because they were much smaller trips. This was not like multiple year programs. Anyway, long story short, the Sonder Project was not an organization that I founded, but was an organization I was hired to lead, because the Sonder Project was founded by a group of entrepreneurs who wanted to have the greatest impact possible. And through their research, really through the writings of Peter Singer and a book called The Life You Can Save, were really inspired about the idea that if you want to like have the greatest impact, if you want to touch the most amount of lives and create the greatest good, the greatest transformational change, then your dollar can go a lot further in supporting communities that experience extreme poverty. And so they were inspired to work in sub-Saharan Africa. And they started funding Build On, the organization I was working for, and started building schools. And they traveled on one of the trips that I was directing. I was eventually became the director of Build On's entire international trips program. They went on one of these trips. They went to Burkina Faso. It was their first time on the continent. And they were like, you know, blown away. The culture is amazing. The people are beautiful. It's so kind and welcoming. Despite, you know, the American perspective and the materialism that might not exist in the same world. Or they wanted to create their own organization and understand where the impact was going. And the Sonder Project was born. This was 10 years ago, actually. We're celebrating our 10-year anniversary this year. So I joined the organization in 2018 because they needed someone to lead the organization, someone who had experience on the ground. And they were operating at that time only in Burkina Faso with staff members that I had actually first connected with when I was working at Build On. So there was really good symmetry in me understanding kind of where they were coming from and the communities, the countries they were operating in. And now it's been project. Currently, we expanded to Malawi. So we have Burkina Faso and Malawi. Our mission is to empower communities through high-impact sustainable development. We're focused specifically on water, education, and sustainable agriculture projects. We really believe that these three issues, water, education, and agriculture, are interconnected and really requires all of these to help communities that are suffering from extreme poverty to lift themselves up. And so we drill wells, we students to go to secondary school. We have some community farm projects that allow community members to rent plots of land and earn income. And that's where we are today.
Wow,
That was a
wow.
very long answer to your question.
No, and I mean it matters, right? Because it is our life experiences that inform who we are trying to be. In my own experiences, I feel that I am, and because mostly I'm a very spiritually grounded person, like I'm becoming, like this constant reflective life, of who I am and some of my own limitations as a person and some of the limitations I want to overcome. So I find that experience gives context to who we are and how we make sense of the world and the impact we want or who we want to be in the world. I mean, some people don't necessarily think about other people's problems, right? But I also found that yearning for me comes from my own experiences with trauma, with loss, with being victimized in different ways, being othered in different ways, but also just being a very sensitive person. I've always been a very sensitive person. And so as I have grown, I find myself being more aware and comfortable with these sensitivities and things that touch my heart, and leaning more towards that as opposed to trying to move away from that. I remember there was a time in my life where, it just felt like it was not useful to be a caring and compassionate person in the world because the world is so
Oh
harsh.
man.
Because
Ouch.
it, yeah.
Wow, that's intense.
Yeah, just because of how harsh things can be, and sometimes, especially when one is doing community work, seeing or experiencing how the people you are trying to work with or help seem to not be interested in the kind of help you're trying to give them, which leads me to my next sort of like set of deliberations based on what you have shared. I mean, your own otherness that comes from your identity as an American Jewish and or yeah, person. And I think especially now with what is happening in the world, global politics, war, I'm just wondering how that part of who you are might be affecting you as a person. And you mentioned the word developmental countries. For a very long time, I used to think Africa was a developing continent, but the more I understand how capitalism and colonialism operate, I feel like the term developing nations or developing countries is so problematic because it has often meant that, that becomes the reason for our suppression, the loss of our culture as Africans, loss of our languages, and really coercion to assimilate to Western cultural values of consumption, ways of being, and we've sort of like had this in a very tiny way in, exchange around how do we then work within these systems that, in my view, have created so much toxicity in the world. How do you work in a particular context that, and I think Burkina Faso is an interesting place for you to be in, particularly now with the leadership politically. So just, yeah, what do you think about what I'm
That's
saying?
interesting. Well, I'm just curious, how do you prefer, what is your preference in terms of how should I communicate that? I'm curious. I understand exactly what you said, and I'm just curious if there is a better way that I could speak to that. I often say economically developing if I say it fully, because it then becomes more capitalistic. focus, like, because in terms of development and like, I mean, my perspective is such that, like, in so many ways, many cultures in Africa are so much more developed than American culture, certainly, you know, that I'm familiar with. But is there another way of
I mean,
labeling?
that's one of the tensions I'm sitting with. How, you know, these categories that have been created and the language that we continue to use. So I saw someone posted something on LinkedIn, and it was ridiculous amounts of money. So he wrote an amount, billions of dollars that leave Africa as resources, raw resources, and how much comes in, which was significantly less than what goes out. And there was a like three different categories, including corruption, illicit trade, and I forgot the other one, billions again, that were not coming back to Africa. You know, so when one thinks about developing and economics, I feel like Africa is deliberately being put in the position it's in terms of economic advancement, because that seems to be what most people refer to when they talk about nations and their levels of development. And this person on LinkedIn was saying, if only 20% of the money that was being stolen was injected back into the continent, you know, road infrastructure would be so much better. Other technological, you know, advancements would be made, employment and all these things. So I don't have an answer for your question, but it is language that I am increasingly becoming aware of, as I'm also becoming politically aware of, you know, our situation in Africa. So I don't have an answer for you in terms of what is the
Well,
alternative.
that's okay. I was just curious. Yeah. I mean, you were speaking about prior to that, to my question, kind of about rephrase exactly. I forget the nature. I got hooked on the developing thing in it.
For me, it's really so. And if it's not too much to share a bit about your own identity in the global context right now,
Oh, yes.
the
Thank
tension,
you.
the tension of understanding what outsiders tend to do to, you know, people in the context of development. You know, and the current political climate, how do you, what are your reactions to that? How do you feel about those kind of things? Especially as it relates to your work.
Well, just in terms of my own identity and in the current affairs that occur, I mean, I think there's just a lot of grief. You know, there's a lack of control to be able to feel like you could do anything about the situation, and there's a lot of pain and sadness from just experiencing the reality of strife, of conflict that exists. And I wish it wasn't the way it is. And I wish for peace and respect and dignity for Palestinian people, for Israeli people. But that's very complicated, and I'm not going to get into further details. I mean, in terms of the context of like of the development world and kind of our identity within it and our role, it's complicated. Like, if you mean if you look at the structure of the development industry, is it the ideal situation? I mean, you talked, I think, at the beginning just about all these different NGOs operating in similar spaces and yet not necessarily always collaborating. And why is that? You know, where is the lack of collaboration? And it's part of it's driven just by our attention-seeking economy, in which, you know, the organization that can attract the greatest amount of attention can perhaps get the greatest amount of funding. And there's a lot of brand identity that goes along. And that's not necessarily beneficial always to the people, because perhaps we could be more efficient if we're all working together. But then who's going to pay for it, and how's it going to operate? I don't have an answer to that question. The Sonda Project operates within a system that exists. And that system is messy and maybe not ideal, but it is helping people. I mean, and that's kind of ultimately, at the end of the day, there's a lot of stuff that I can't control. But I can control and have an influence on, you know, the people around me, the work of the Sonder Project, the countries that we're interfacing with, the communities that we're connecting with, and you know, our staff on the ground is partnering with, you know, local government ministries and directly with communities. You know, we're not doing work that communities aren't asking for and are part of. I mean, our methodology relies on partnership, or it wouldn't be successful and nothing would be sustainable. And I think that just continues, as much as there's so much I cannot control. That doesn't mean that we just stop it and give up and don't help people, you know, because the system is messy and broken doesn't mean we don't care. And so that's just kind of what drives me. What I can control is, are we having an impact on people's lives? Are we making a difference? And, you know, that is ultimately, I think, our focus. And we have to stay specific to that, because I can't control all the other things. But I love the conversation and, like, that you bring, you know, people like you are bringing to challenge some of those structures that exist and think about, you know, new ways, you know, how else could this operate? I'm not sure that I have the answer, but I think those are important questions to be asking. A lot of it does come back to funding in my mind. Like, where is the money? Where are the resources? It also makes me think about, you know, the nonprofit sector. What role does it play in the countries that it's working in? When you have such a large nonprofit sector operating in a country, and that country is then benefiting from funds moving in from elsewhere because of we are, quote unquote, developing or need things or poor, and therefore we are incentivized to be poor because maybe that brings in development organizations. Like, what kind of system is that? Are we, you know, is it encouraging? And everybody wins because foreigners can feel like they're changing people's lives and making a difference. And, you know, leadership can potentially see things happening that, you know, they're not necessarily controlling, but they're making impact, and maybe that can lead to corruption and things like that. I don't know. You got me thinking. Again, I don't have solutions. And I also, you know, we work with a lot of ministries and government people in our countries, and they seek to do good work too. You know, resources are so limited within our partner countries. It's really challenging. So how do we bring more wealth into governments and make sure that they're operating effectively? It's ultimately what we need. I see that issue and challenge is bigger than what the Sonder Project can do or bring, but time will tell. I mean, I'd love to have greater influence and continue to be a partner, obviously in a way that's sustainable.
Sustainability is quite a big thing. And for me, it can often, how local communities respond to external aid can also be a symptom of fear, I think, of people not feeling as if though they have got the capability or the capacity to change their communities themselves. And in my work, you know, I'm increasingly finding that that sense of lack of capacity or capability is not inherent, but it is often something that has been internalized and, you know, by and a response to trauma in different ways. But you speak about the work that you do, which is really focused on water and agriculture. And I connect those.
And education.
And education. I connect water and agriculture not only to basic survival needs, but they tie into the spiritual sort of like realm for me, because in the African context, our sense of place and belonging has been tied to the land for so long, you know, and obviously water is a big part of our relationship with the land and with life. And so I see those as being very instrumental and having a lot of potential to also perhaps bring in other forms of knowledge into your programs as they relate to cultural awareness. I think it would be great to find out, to hear how the people on the ground relate to agriculture from a maybe cultural perspective, not only as a food source, you know. And I'm also aware that it's something that you might not necessarily, you know, have more information on. I don't know, do you guys at Sonda ever speak about the land and agriculture in those terms, not as only, you know, a resource for consumption, but as it relates to ecological consciousness and, you know, our sense of belonging and oneness with land?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, to be honest, you know, it'd be hard for me to speak on that kind of cultural connection that exists. And, you know, I wouldn't say that it's our focus. I mean, our focus is land as a resource. But it is conservation. It is key when we talk about agriculture. I mean, you know, and replenishing soils and regenerative agriculture, you know, it is key. And I think that plays into what you're talking about, because it's about how do we cherish the land? How do we ensure that the land is not just a cash and burn material, but is in fact, part of our ecosystem, you know, the critical part of our ecosystem. So perhaps it's not from such a ecological perspective in terms of how do we maintain this source so that it's sustainable, so that we're, you know, there's no-till agriculture, cover cropping, making composts organically, not using so many chemical fertilizers and pesticides. Like, these are issues that we do talk about, and these are critical to ensure that the soils is not being depleted and deforested, and, you know, and planting trees. We're actually in our farm in Burkina Faso currently working on an orchard as part of our community farm, because it is that ecosystem that we're developing and trying to move away from burning land, which is common in some of the communities that we're working with, because it might have like a short-term benefit. Like, long-term, it's not regenerative, and it's depleting the nutrients in the soil. So, you know, that's conversation, and that's education. And, you know, be clear that I'm representing the Sonder Project here, but I want to just acknowledge, like, my teams on the ground, the host country national staff who are actually, you know, day to day running and operating the programs that we're doing, and who are, you know, visionary in terms of what it is we can do to support and partner with communities. And I would, you know, I want to be clear that my role at the Sonder Project, I am involved in kind of program operations and strategizing and thinking. But I also play a bridge role because I am an American and I have access to resources in a way that, you know, our partner countries don't. And so I play that bridge. It's about telling the stories of the communities and partners that we work with, and with the incredible resilience and power that they have and reflect, so that we can raise funds, so that we can sponsor more students and create more sustainable agricultural programs and the like.
And I mean, I follow the Sonder Project's social media pages, and I see just the group of a collective of entrepreneurs who seem really enthusiastic to be supporting the Sonder Project. Congratulations to you and your
company
on that. I spoke with a real estate organization. Is it a restaurant? I saw there were drinks, you know, so that's a really
I mean, it takes a village kind of concept. I mean, and the Sonder Project operates because of all of these other businesses, corporations, and individuals who contribute and care and want to support other people who, I mean, are suffering with, you know, relatively basic needs of water and access to education and the ability to grow food. So because it's been our 10-year anniversary, we've been recently shouting out a lot of those partner organizations. But the Sonder Project was originally founded. I talked about entrepreneurs. The owners of a property management company in the Panhandle area of Florida said, we're successful, we're doing well, and we want to make sure a portion of our proceeds are also improving lives. That's ultimately how the Sonder Project was established. And there were a number of other businesses, real estate companies, you know, beer distributors. We've been shouting out a whole host of other businesses who've kind of gotten on board and want to have an impact and want to improve lives. And the Sonder Project is that vessel through which people can be connected, because we're actually a really small but mighty team, which allows, you know, we don't have a big overhead and big administrative team. I mean, the majority of our funds are going to our programs on the ground, and that's because our board, you know, covers my salary, and I'm the only U.S.-based full-time staff member. So everything else is on the ground.
I think I've also seen that your partners, these entrepreneurs, have also visited Burkina Faso. If I'm correct, it could have been Malawi that I saw in the pictures, which is really nice. And it makes me think about relationality and how, especially where we find ourselves, you know, in the history of humanity, how I believe relational ethics, so our sense of humanity, comes before everything else, right? And how sharing our human experiences in authentic ways can actually bring more transformation to both the giver and the receiver, and actually make it a circular sort of like relationship, as opposed to others just sort of like receiving. And for me, I see an opportunity in the agricultural system. So as an example, I know many African cultures have very specific ways, as an example, of storing seeds, you know, that are connected to the cycles of the moon, as an example, or the cycles of the seasons. There are just so many principles and traditions around African food systems that I feel like also bring in story and an opportunity for the people on the ground to learn more about their ancestry and how things were done before pesticides became a thing, right? And how seeds were preserved and so on, but also an opportunity for people to interact at a human level. Are there like any kind of like exchanges like that where you find that the Sonder team on the ground, when they interact with the donors or the contributors, it doesn't feel like, you know, very hierarchical, the relationship? How are you experiencing those dynamics? Because I, even in my own life, you know, when someone is giving you something, you know, there's very subtle power dynamics that I feel like continue to perpetuate helplessness in people. You know, how are you helping young people, these leaders in the Sonder Project, to think of themselves differently as it relates to the donors especially?
Season 4 of Conscious Conversations has been brought to you in creative partnership with Atomic Shoots.
Well, I will say bringing donors, supporters of the Sonder Project to our partner countries, into communities, interacting with communities, there's nothing that connects people more or feels more. The connection that happens in that experience is magical, to be honest. It's just, I mean, it's transformational for the individual who's maybe never been in an environment, culture like that. And it's also, I think, empowering for the community that we're engaging in to say, you know, because we'll do a homestay, we'll stay with in a person's home, and we'll just like, you know, we'll just be together and living, and that there's dignity in that. It's like, wow, this, like, you know, this foreign person is staying in my home, that's meaningful. And the foreign person is like, wow, like, these people are human. Like, that's it. It's not complicated, you know, but like, until you actually are sitting there next to each other and you can see another person's humanity, it doesn't become real. You know, it doesn't feel real. It's not connected, but the invisible strings of connection between people, it doesn't take much to bind them. Mm-hmm. And so I just think it is so important. There is great value in that kind of cultural sharing that can happen. And when we're doing those kinds of trips, I try to make them less about like, oh, here we come as the donor giving you things. Like, that's not the perspective. It's more or less like, here we are. Like, I want you to meet these people. I want you to see and connect with the people that we're partnering with, that we are in community with, and that you are in community with. And so, you know, it's about seeing ultimately. And I think that happens through that process of going to another culture, of being embraced by that culture. Because I'll tell you, in Malawi and Burkina Faso, the culture is unique from American culture in so many ways. And music, song, and dance is such a core component that I've at least personally witnessed, It's so beautiful. You know, I think as an American, I've always been told like, or I've always thought I can't sing. Like, I don't have a good voice. Like, I'm not gonna I'm just gonna watch other people perform because it's a performative culture and like you have to be the best to be able to stand out. But when I travel in communities, like I can sing, I can dance because it's a culture, it's a sharing that's happening. Like music, song, it's not about being the best, but it's about like the spirit of the song and the energy that we are all sharing together in this space. And this is how we celebrate. This is how we communicate to each other that we are enjoy. But so anyway, to bring supporters and donors into that space and to be able to share that is really powerful.
I love that, and it reminds me of what Elder Malidoma Somé wrote about in his book. He was describing a funeral, so what happens in his tradition when there's a funeral, and he spoke about grieving, and the fact that when someone has died, people, the community, the whole community comes and they sing. They sing and people cry and they all grieve. They sing and they cry until people cannot cry anymore. And so the idea of song, bringing people together and it not really being competitive, but really about being in community and sharing, whether it is in grief or in celebration, can be such a beautiful expression of African values, I believe, you know, and it makes me want to ask you, what have been some of your most transformative moments in the projects or the communities you work with?
Oh, I mean, the most transformative, I mean, for me, oh, I mean, I've seen the impact is always, I mean, personally, like being in community and that kind of sharing and just feeling as one is always, is meaningful. But in terms of our work and the impact, I mean, we just recently, one of our students who we sponsor, who was in ninth grade, or the equivalent of ninth grade. He dropped out of school though. He like high school, equivalent of high school is not free in Malawi and Burkina Faso. And so, less than 50% of students who finish primary school, like grade eight, make it into high school. And even less than that, less than 15% of students from rural communities actually graduate high school in our countries. And anyway, recently one of our students who we sponsored from the equivalent of grade 9 through grade 12 graduated last year from high school and recently was accepted into an internal medicine program to go to university. And that was his dream. When we asked him in ninth grade, when we first interviewed him, what do you want to do? He wanted to be a doctor. And for him to now be in an internal medicine program, and the Sonder Project is actually continuing to support him through that. I mean, that feels good. That feels like seeing people through that impact. And he will come back and support his community and touch more lives. And that is the cycle that we strive for. Seeing the transformational power of water. I mean, there is going to a community. I was just in Malawi. I got back recently. And we went to a community where we drilled a well last year, and the community was so excited for our visit. So excited to kind of host us. And anyway, there was this great celebration and they were like, you have to go and see the old water source. Like, yeah, you have to see, you know. And so it was like the sun was going down. We had arrived in the community a little late, and with all the celebration, like it was getting dark, but like the women, particularly of the community, who carry the overwhelming burden of having to collect water culturally, we're like, let's go. So we said, okay, let's go. So we walk through these trails. It takes us about 20 minutes down this mountain to get to this kind of dried riverbed where they had dug this open well that was, the hole was probably about, 10 feet deep, where this is where they would collect water, and they would have to walk back up that hill with a bucket on their head to get one bucket. And the water source was so scarce that they would limit it to one, maybe two buckets for the whole family, which is the same location where, you know, they would tell me animals are drinking water and there's no dignity in this space. And this woman picks up, shows me her ankle where she has this like brutal scar from falling on that hill to collect water. But that being history, and like the joy that we had shared a few minutes earlier, just celebrating around this borehole, you know, a relatively simple manual borehole that can pump water, and women can get water anytime, any day. The dignity that comes with that, the impact that can have on a community, from improving health, improving the amount of time people can save and to spend with their family, which then has an impact on economy, because you can now grow food because you have access to water, and you can have a garden and you can sell that food, and you're not spending as much money on healthcare because the water is cleaner, and community relations are improving because you're not fighting over a scarce water source, but you're now just, you know, able to share and sing and celebrate around the water source that is plentiful, and students can go to school more because they're not worried about having like dirty clothes because they have access to water more freely, and they're not having to help their mothers collect water. So yeah, school attendance rises. I mean, visiting communities like that and hearing that story, like, because when I'm in communities, like I interview people, I want to meet with people. I want to understand, like, is this really having an impact? Like seriously, like I want to know from a very like, honest approach, but I hear that story again and again and again and again. I mean, in community after community, and that's meaningful.
That's beautiful, and it just feels like there are so many stories, you know, that can come out of that in terms of literature, because, you know, with the rhetoric or the conversations around decolonization, and I think just the political climate, sometimes in our resistance, we can throw the baby out with the bathwater, right? So how do we find ways of navigating the challenges in the different systems we find ourselves in? And how do we focus more on the good that is coming out of these particular systems, you know? I don't think any particular system is inherently 100% good without any weakness, but I do feel like there is a big potential for people to elevate more of the positive stories and to help people, you know, use their own voice to share the impact of projects like the Sonda Project as an example, because I feel like it also brings a sense of empowerment to the community members as well. One of the other things that attracted me or drew me to your work is seeing its connection with the Dagara Ancestral Project, which is also directly linked to the Water Project. Can you share anything about that particular project? As you know, my own research, doctoral research work is on ancestral trauma. And so anything that has got to do with, remembering our ancestors and addressing the wounds of colonization and ongoing colonialism is so important to me. Do you have anything to share about that work and the impact it might be having just in terms of intergenerational awareness and memory?
We've been blessed to develop a partnership with followers from Maladoma Somme and Sobonfu Somme. If you're not, people aren't familiar, then you should definitely look them up. Maladoma and Sobonfu, who both passed in the past, I don't want to get this wrong, but certainly in the past 10 years and 5 years even, but have just both from Burkina Faso and both just led a spiritual journey and became kind of a bridge from the Western world into the Dagara traditions. And there is a very large, incredibly kind and generous community of people who support, who are followers of Maladoma and Sobonfu's teachings. And so much of what they teach is around grief and the issue of grief. Those communities here have been so inspired and touched by all the teachings and learnings that they gained via Maladoma and Sobonfu that they have created a reciprocal campaign where they can give back to the Dagara communities through clean water. And the Sonder Project is the vessel through which that happens. We've drilled 3 wells in Maladoma's own home community as a result of that relationship. We're working on the 4th well, where now we're focused specifically around the Dagara communities at large in terms of identifying needs. And, I unfortunately didn't have the benefit of connecting or knowing Maladoma and Sobonfu personally, but I have gotten to know a number of the followers of them, and I have read at least one of Maladoma's books and have learned and this issue of grief and how we grieve is really something we could all benefit from. I think in American culture, understanding how people grieve so alone in such isolation, I think oftentimes, or there's like a very specific time and place that is 1 week maybe after a person passes, and then we have to move on. But grief, of course, doesn't work like that. And grief sits in our bodies. And so anybody who, is interested in learning more about grief, and not even just from personal experience, I think communal grief. I talked about being a Jewish American and the kind of grief that results from just the conflicts that exist in the world. And so I think there's a lot we can all benefit from by exploring this issue of grief, which Maladoma and Sobonfu have done so much work on and shared so generously. Great example, kind of like what I see you stand for in terms of like bringing out African voices that reflect an innately authentic, genuine African perspective that it's built on, deep lineages, and bringing that knowledge to the masses, because what does Africa have to bring? So much, and I think there's this misunderstanding that like what Africa brings. This is, you know, this is a generalized view, but it's like, oh, what does Africa bring? It's like poverty or something, but like that's so far from what Africa has to offer and what Africa does give if you listen, you know, and if you pay attention. And yeah, anyway, Maladoma and Sobhonfu, I think, are great examples of voices that we can accelerate or expand on. So much to benefit from.
Thank you so much for that. And I know the time I've booked with you is running up. Just for a young person who really wants to organize in the ways you have, what would you say, especially as it relates to education around who you, because you had to go through a process of discovering who Chad was, right? And what you want to do in the world and finding ways to navigate for you to be doing that. And I'm sure it will continue to evolve and to grow, but you are living a very impactful life. What would you share? What would you say to a young person who wants to be a change agent and do more through this kind of intervention?
Oh, what would I say? I mean, my perspective on life is like, you should always like keep moving forward. Like keep, as a young person, like I didn't know what I wanted to be or where I wanted to go, but I would just follow like the next interest, and I would passionately seek that out, you know, whether that meant at the time traveling around the United States, moving in the different parts of the Americas to experience different lives, or joining the Peace Corps. It was always about moving and passionately seeking out whatever it is that your interest is, that seems to be your guiding light. But also be flexible, you know, because that whatever vision you have then is not going to be the result, but it is going to lead you somewhere. And so you have to like be willing to, you know, have a vision, be passionate about it, and don't be afraid to admit that like you didn't know what you were talking about, but there's another way, you know. So be flexible, be adaptable, continue to listen, because that is ultimately the only way to work, you know, in another culture. If you're not listening, then we're not benefiting. You know, it's driven by the Sonder Project's built on core value of integrity, of believing in the potential of others, listening to others, of demanding equality, and wanting to pay it forward. And so, you know, those core values, I think, are kind of critical to that path. If you're interested in making an impact and touching people's lives and working with people, then do it, but do it humbly. Yeah, and do it passionately.
Yeah. I recognize myself in so many of the words you have used, like I've always had the ability to just move on. I've been an entrepreneur for very long, but I've also had the courage to move on, you know,
like
when things don't work out, move on, do something else, you know, just move on, be flexible, be adaptable. And I think those are some of the skills we are not really taught in school, like how to harness. And I feel like when we don't have those qualities, then we don't grow to our full potential. But I'd really love to thank you so much, Chad, for the work you're doing in these communities, for your dedication. I've personally experienced you as a very open person, as a person who is giving of their time, and time is the one resource we actually have in very limited ways. And so I know that you are authentic, and I really want to say thank you very much. Yeah, and for being part of our Conscious Conversations community now.
Thank you so much for having me, Mbato. It's been like a great pleasure. And yeah, I'm just grateful for the chance to speak with you in this setting and be part of the Conscious Conversation community. And let's continue speaking consciously to each other, so we all benefit.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you for journeying with us in this episode of Conscious Conversations. May something spoken here return to you when you most need it, gently, powerfully, as a reminder of your wholeness. If this conversation moved you, I'd love to hear from you. You can connect with us through montsiem.com. Until next time, stay present, stay tender, and remember, you are not alone in the work of transformation and liberation. Who goes off? Who's the